Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster, and today I'm here with Stephanie Donahue and Brett Lonsdale. So, Stephanie, how are things going?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How are you today?
Good, good. You said you just landed, so that's pretty quick to get back home and get from the airport.
That's right. So excited to talk about Azure today that I just couldn't wait.
Yeah, no. Brett, any hurricanes happening over in England like they are over here?
Just drizzle.
Constant rain, right?
Yeah.
Well, we're thinking about all of our friends and family down in the Florida area and all of that. At least, you know, I know Andrew Connell, who was on the show a couple shows ago, was him and his family are really watching closely, and we have a lot of at least technology friends that are down there. So all of our thoughts are with you guys, and so just be safe. So, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I just thought it was amazing to see see our friend Andrew Connell, you know, just cruising along in his Tesla and speaking with neither of his hands on the steering wheel whilst he recorded a video about the hurricane. That was pretty interesting.
His car was driving him around. That was incredible. Yeah. Well, so the topic today is Azure, and I guess we're hitting on the fact of do you need a data center today with modern cloud tools like Azure? I don't know who wants to talk about it. I think we can all at least talk on the points of the intro. But before we started recording, Stephanie, you had an IT pro background. And what does Azure really mean to you from that perspective?
Well, so it's probably important for me to preface that with the fact that I do a lot of work in the mid-market, and I think Azure has been something that is coming across pretty slow in the mid-market, maybe slower than some of the enterprise customers, but you know, I think it's interesting, right? Because being an IT pro for quite some time, I've done my fair share of Windows installs and updates and dealing with troubleshooting servers and those awful error event logs and all of that support that goes with it. And so what I think is interesting is that, you know, we saw kind of the same thing happen with SharePoint and Office 365 and all of that, where IT pros all go, oh no, where's my job going? What happens if I don't have servers to support? And we saw this push into, okay, but now we get to focus on other things, compliance, security, all of that. And I feel like the same thing applies to Azure. We've kind of taken the maybe a little more of the monotonous work out of the way, and we can actually focus on the cool stuff and the things that really matter. So I think that's really where a lot of the value is in Azure.
Yeah. Well, what about from your side, Brett, from the ISV side?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, yeah, we at Lightning Tools, we're an ISV, and we've seen a lot of change over the last 4 to 5 years with the shift away from SharePoint on-premises to Office 365. And yeah, developing our products and Office 365, that pretty much every single one of them in some way or another uses Azure. You know, we've had to look at querying the Azure AD for our permissions management tool. If we take BCS as another example, there's customers that are wanting to access external data sources that reside on premises and bring that data into SharePoint Online. So once again, we're utilizing Azure there. And there's also been the recent addition of the SharePoint framework. Using client-side web parts, you know, we can now use a public CDN to host different files, the CSS and PNG files, JS files, etc., that the client-side web parts make use of. So I think all of our products in one way or another are utilizing Azure. And really, I want to pick up on a point that Stephanie made, and that is the small to mid-market. And in fact, also Rob, we were just talking about before the show kicked off, the fact that you can spin up all these different environments using Azure and so on, but this is something that we find a lot of small to medium companies don't really have a handle on. And when we start talking about configuring different things in Azure AD, you know, even creating apps and creating public keys and so on, so that our tools can communicate with Azure. There seems to be quite a lack of knowledge there from the small to medium sized organizations. They don't have those SharePoint administrators or farm admins to on hand to configure this stuff for them.
Yeah, that's something that we're running into that is, and maybe we can talk about this a little later in the show, but it is somewhat of a problem, is that you can't have a one person that's an expert in all of Azure. You know, it's very diverse in what it does, right? So you might have experts in maybe an Azure SQL expert versus an Azure CDN expert versus an Azure storage expert, right? To where all of these different services are very different, and they have very different deployment models. They have very different contingency models multi-geo deployment options, and all of the stuff seems to be very different and very isolated to each service. So we're finding that, I mean, from an architecture perspective, from a implementation to a support perspective, all of these people are not the same person. And that's one of the things that it's so vast, which is a good thing. The more you adopt it and the more you use it, you're going to find that not one person's going to have all the knowledge to do everything.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the scenario that these small companies are facing, you know. And from an ISV perspective, like I say, you know, if we want to deliver our products in the way that they have worked in the past in SharePoint on premises, then we do need to utilize Azure in just about every single product. we do a lot of handholding to make sure that we get those products configured. So,
we've talked about, we've talked about services in Azure and we'll hit on that here in a minute. But, Stephanie, you had some thoughts on kind of Azure as infrastructure as a service. So what does that mean, to the mid-market and from an IT pro, perspective, how would you use that? And what does that mean?
Well, so my first introduction to Azure was actually spinning up a SharePoint farm. So I thought it was actually pretty cool that, rather than before when we were still on-prem, you're building each server individually, and the thought that you could very quickly spin up and take down a set of servers, I thought was really a compelling thing. And that was kind of when I first started getting into understanding what Azure could do and the fact that it wasn't just, VMs in a cloud environment, right? That there was a lot more to it. So I think that it's really becoming, it is becoming the back end, right? In 365, we've got Stream hosted in Azure and Planner hosted in Azure and all of that. But for those of us that are, maybe still trying to figure out what can I put out there, what can I move to Azure, why would I move it to Azure, from an infrastructure that belongs to me as an organization and the stuff that I'm responsible for, I think there's still a gap in figuring out, it's there and kind of what's possible because of what they're doing in 365, that's pretty public. But I think there's still probably a lot for administrators to learn about kind of that back end and why you would want to move things over.
Yeah, I've got an example of this, and I'm not really a fan of infrastructure as a service, but I'm more of a we use it because of necessity. We have a fairly, I don't want to say hyper-customized, but uber-customized, maybe that's the word for it. But a lot of customizations in a SharePoint farm that's on-premises now. The SharePoint farm lives in, I believe it's deployed in the United States. I know we have another piece of it that's deployed in Europe as well. But as we start to go around the globe and even in within Europe and maybe even in Canada, there's a lot of data residency requirements that they can't use, even though it's a company-hosted farm. There's data residency rules with maybe it could be client customers or whatever, that if somebody is using that farm and they're interacting with this type of data, then the farm itself has to live in that country. And what we're looking at doing and doing at this point now is leveraging the infrastructure as a service model to where we can spin up a SharePoint farm, just like you said, but do it within the context of Azure so that we don't have to build out things in a data center, right? We can deploy SharePoint just like it would be on premises, the actual SKUed product. We can deploy all of our customizations and all of our, you know, whatever we've done in that respect, but just in a local farm in an Azure data center in the local country, if that is available, which it's becoming more and more available, but it's pretty much everywhere we need it at this point, which is something quite remarkable, because back before this was available, we would have had to go out and maybe lease a building and put servers in that building and cooling and make sure power was available and all of this stuff, to where now we can just, I can do it all here from Nashville, right? I can spin up a VM. I can tell it what data center to deploy it in, and I'm off to the races. So in that respect, I think it's a game changer for us. Even though I'm not a big fan, it's extremely useful to be able to deploy this infrastructure as a service, and still essentially continue business as usual, but without having the core infrastructure requirements of having to build out a data center and servers and whatever, wherever we need to put it.
So go ahead, Brett.
So one of I think the concerns of many organizations is the transparency of the cost of all of this stuff. And how do you even go about calculating the cost of what your infrastructure is going to be like? So this is something that you can price up pretty easily if you roll back a few years and you're planning to implement this using physical servers. But if you're planning on putting this in the cloud, and you're looking at things like SQL Azure being priced per DTU, and there's these different tiers to choose from, and then maximum sizes for databases and so on, how do you even begin to plan for all of that stuff?
You know, that they've done a really good job. I believe there's a cost estimate spreadsheet. It used to be a spreadsheet. I think it's actually part of the Azure webpage now. If you go to the azure.microsoft.com and then you click on pricing, I think you can, they have a really nice cost estimate app out there that you can just plug in the services you need, whether it's infrastructure or it's Azure services or whatever. And I found it actually does a pretty dang good job at estimating the actual cost of this stuff. Now, that's assuming you size it out appropriately and things like that. You have to know what sizes to build of these different services. But I found that just in my experience, it's been fairly dang accurate. So I was really impressed when we got the bill for the first couple months of our Azure stuff. It was pretty spot on with what we had estimated.
So again, I mean, this going back to the skills gap, I think, really, as well, especially in the smaller organizations, because inside your organization, you have teams of people that have that experience in order to plan it. But for things like DTUs, I mean, you hear people quite often just, what is a DTU? What are these different tiers? And yeah, there is a calculator in Azure that allows you to go in and select which tier you want. But how do you even know for the sort of small to medium sized organization what you might do? I mean, do you have any recommendations around that, or?
Trial and error. Seriously, I mean, we actually ran into that because we didn't know. And a good example is using DocumentDB. I think it's, is it DTUs or RTUs or whatever the units they calculate the usage of DocumentDB. I forget what they call it. It's one of those, but what we did was we just set it to a certain level. We started doing load tests against it, with a percentage of users, and just to see what that would do, right? What does that mean to that usage, and what does that do to that? And from there, we were able to more accurately estimate the actual size that we needed, and then start to estimate cost for that. And so just being kind of conservative that I was, we got our estimates and we said, okay, well, we think it's this. We think it's, you know, I'll just use a round number. We think it's 100. So I was like, okay, well, let's quadruple that and let's size for 400 for launch just in case. And then we launched and the thing was doing like 2% utilization. So we scaled it down to what, you know, what we thought it was actual after launch. But that's another great thing about this Azure stuff is that you can, if you need to, you can scale it up and down either dynamically or manually, and have it actually support whatever you need it to do. You know, whether it be for a launch where you're going to be flooded with traffic or just to scale up and down during peak load times. Right. So that's that was something that we found that was extremely easy to do to scaling the platforms.
And do you have any tools that you use to perform those load tests, or how did you go about doing that?
So we're a big load runner shop. We also use from the dev side, we use the VSTS load testing agent as well. But for the most part, our load tests were done by load runner, which is probably more common in the bigger enterprises. I don't know. What do you guys use for, I guess, in the ISV and mid-market for load testing to help estimate this? Because I think it's important to understand what's out there and what's available from, you know, from all angles.
Yeah, I mean, we pretty much use similar tools. We've done some load testing and database sizing estimates. But I mean, if we take, for example, our Social Square tool, which that uses a SQL database hosted in Azure with a SharePoint provider hosted app to communicate with that database. The customer themselves are hosting the DB for the content. One of the common questions is, well, how big is this database going to get? What how much size do we need and what have you? And I guess the same questions get asked as well for SharePoint on premises. But the difference is here is they're actually needing to specify a tier and the number of DTUs that they're going to require. The size itself will completely depend on how many, you know, images are stored in there. Are they uploading videos to posts? And obviously, how many users are creating posts, et cetera, et cetera. So it's quite difficult for us to advise the customer when it's we don't have an in-depth understanding of the utilization of that database. For even though we provide the product, we don't know exactly how they're going to go ahead and use it and for what purpose.
And I don't have a standard really that from a load testing perspective. I would say far less common when you're talking about smaller customers. You are often utilizing applications that could probably handle quite a bit more load than they're ever going to see from a small customer. You know, you have 200 folks in an organization. You may have, you know, 5 to 10 in there at a time, maybe 20. You talk about a bigger application that spreads across, you know, the whole organization, you're still, you know, maybe not even going to see half on there at a time. So load testing is kind of one of those things that just doesn't come up a whole lot.
Yeah, one of the things we ran into was obviously in the lower environments, as we're down in like development and you know, integration testing and even in the QA side of things, we often use the free tiers, right? Just let's spin this up on one of the free tiers, because they all have, almost all of the services have like this free, when you talk about the services, not necessarily virtual machines, but the actual platform as a service stuff. They have a tier that's free and it's more for like development and things like that. We would see, even during tests, right? We would run just like single or maybe 4 or 5 user load test on there. And we would see just wild, variances in the numbers. A good example was we had a set of web services that were up and down, and they would perform within, you know, 50 milliseconds sometimes, and then sometimes they would jump to 800 milliseconds to respond. And as soon as we moved up to a different tier, one that you actually had to pay for, we saw very much more consistent numbers in your actual scaling of the response times of these things. And It really had to do with we couldn't explain it until we moved it up and figured out that, oh, I guess we're on a very much low end shared infrastructure, and it, we, you know, maybe it's just under load and all this stuff was happening randomly. But once we started moving up in the higher scaled paid tiers, we saw a lot better and more consistent performance. And even more so on that, we found that it scaled very well, even on the low end. And we would really only be jumping up to the higher end scaled tiers for some of the backup or the global distribution of services capabilities that the higher end stuff allowed for, rather than the performance. So we were scaling more for the availability of different options in the service rather than the performance itself. I think it's fantastic, and the mm-hmm. the options are, I don't want to say unlimited, but they're very configurable. And when we would get a or even today when we get a bill, it's mind blowing to me just how little it costs. Now, over a 3-year period, it's probably going to end up costing more than buying servers, but it's, we get more, I guess, a more tuned service, so that we have these different tiers of services that we're using, whether it be for web services or data storage or images or whatever, websites. We get very tuned pieces of capabilities that we're able to offer for our applications, rather than a huge farm that has a bunch of web servers on it, or maybe a huge database server farm or whatever that may or may not go utilized to its fullest capacity. And so I think it's for us, it's going to be about a wash in pricing for you know, about the same cost, if not maybe a little more with in the end with Azure, just because we are able to expand our capabilities out and use more of these services. Whereas before, we kind of had to just build some web servers and throw some code on there, right? it was kind of the model before.
Now, Rob, have you seen a drop in the cost overall, though, since the beginning? I feel like when Azure first really started coming into the picture, it was pretty significant in terms of pricing. But that over time, it has become more reasonable and it has become more competitive. Like you said, you know, you're spending, you know, somewhat close to what you would if you did it, if you had your own infrastructure. So over time, have you seen that cost come down at all? Or do you feel like it's been pretty consistent and maybe it's just the perception that's changed?
I would say over the past year, it's remained fairly stable. The cost has remained fairly stable. Probably over the last 3 years, it's come way down in price. What I've found, though, is the capabilities, while the cost has remained fairly flat, the amount of capabilities that they're offering with these services are constantly increasing. So if you look at what I was paying a year ago versus what I'm paying for now, I have way more options, way more capabilities today than I did a year ago. So in that respect, I would say, even though I'm still paying the same thing, I'm getting more for what I'm paying for, which my, you know, even though it's, the bill's the same, it's a negative in, you know, a drop, I guess, in the cost overall.
Now, I don't know whether this relates to your organization, Rob, but maybe more of a conversation with the staff. But over the different packages that you can have, so, you know, there's the pay as you go package versus built-in packages for some of the different SQL Server database hosting and things like that. What do you advise your customers to do? Is it, again, how do you make that decision as to which package to go for?
You know, I think it depends on what you're trying to do, and I hate to give the it depends answer, but maybe I can just talk about what we do. And we're pretty much all pay as you go, because there are some things that we have hosted in Azure that have very I don't want to say low usage, but they have very consistent usage. And some of these things also have very quarterly upticks in usage, right? To where When the app is kind of being used as normal, we scale it out a certain way, and then we scale it up during the peak load times, which it, you know, maybe that's on a Friday night, or maybe that's on a Monday morning, or maybe it's once a quarter, or whatever that may be. And then once that peak is over with, we scale it back down. And as opposed to the kind of constant pay model, where you pay one price and you get you get a set of services for one price, whatever that may be, and you can use them all or you can use them none, but you're still paying the same. And so for us, it makes more sense to very much scale as you go, like the kind of the Amazon model they did with that. I think Stephanie's got in our notes here, to where you scale up as usage comes, and when you need the capacity, you pay for it, and when you don't need it, you don't pay for it. And for me, that's probably one of the biggest benefits of moving to the cloud is that the ability to do just that.
Excellent. And what about you, Steph? I mean, do your customers have, do they ask the similar question, or do they tend to just go with the pay-as-you-go?
No, I definitely think it's the pay-as-you-go model more often than not. I think that's partially because it is kind of a small baby step process to get into Azure, and they kind of want to try it out. And I think that's a good way to just kind of get in there and see how it goes and kind of keep an eye on things.
Awesome. Yeah, and you know, as you get into the services, I mean, we've mostly talked about, and from what I've implemented, it's mostly like web apps and databases and web services, kind of your standard three-tier web model, 3-4 in-tier web model. One of the things that we're starting to see an uptick, specifically in Azure as well, and Amazon kind of is one of the leaders in this as well, is a lot of the AI and cognitive services that really you can't have on premises, right? So some of these services, like the AI and cognitive services, are only available in the cloud. You can't have it on premises, and it's because it's just constantly learning and evolving, and these capabilities are getting better over time, not only as a platform, but also as how you've configured them and how it kind of learns from what's going on in the system. That's something I think that we're going to see, and we're already seeing as a game changer in the way we deliver apps is the consumption of a lot of these services, whether it be through bots that we've talked about before, or through some other mechanism of delivering these services that really give you an edge and can make a difference in a competitive advantage of your enterprise or your company, right? And being able to do things that you've never been able to do before, like face recognition, or maybe it's an Internet of Things hub, to where you're developing devices that use the Alexa services from Amazon, or they use Luis from Azure. Or I think it's Amazon Lex is the actual service name there. So a lot of that stuff is I think from a cloud provider perspective, just pushing it the boundaries way beyond the traditional web app. Hey, I go to this web page and I do things. It's really going to enable us to change the way our people interact with systems, or interact with bots or our company. So I think that's something that we're definitely keeping a pulse on. And I don't know if you guys are seeing an uptick in that, or from an ISV, are you even hearing that, Brett, from your customers? Hey, I want a Lightning Tools bot, or I want a Lightning Tools services, or whatever.
Not really, not yet. But yeah, I'm sure that will probably come. But I mean,
so, you know, one thing I noticed that kind of called out to me when you look at the features and stuff, and you talk earlier about, you know, smaller organizations, maybe you have a jack of all trades, IT administrator, they're responsible for a lot of stuff, especially in the mid-market. And those are the folks that, you know, you're talking about maybe struggling to get up to speed in Azure. But like you mentioned, there's some things that are being taken care of for you. You think about something as simple as the SQL database and auto-tuning based on performance and application usage, and you don't need that expertise anymore. It's kind of taking care of that for you. And something as simple as a database having really good performance really improves the user experience for an application, and user experience is everything, and that performance is really important. So even down to the very simplest of things at the back end of an application, running efficiently and having that part taken care of for you is a big win. And it's something that definitely the smaller organizations really struggle with when it comes to, you know, maybe SQL expertise or some of the expertise, you know, that there's a lot here, a lot of options and things. But like you said, it can be taken care of for you. And when that's happening, it's a better experience overall, and it's easier to get to, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's a real key point is, there is the issue of, not having the understanding of Azure, but then sometimes, you know, you're not needing to either for some of those things. So, absolutely. I think that's a really good point there.
Well, and a lot of this stuff is obviously just in its infancy as a service with both the AI and cognitive services specifically. And I know, I think it was this week or over the last month or so, Elon Musk has said that World War III is going to happen through artificial intelligence rather than through a nuclear war or whatever. And that's something that I think is an interesting statement. I don't know that I agree just yet. I definitely need to understand more of what he's talking about. But if you look at the way some of these places are using bots and some of this cognitive services that, again, is still in its infancy, look at Ashley Madison, right? That whole website had a bunch of dudes that were registered for it that were talking to bots that thought they were there, you know, they had girlfriends online. so, I mean, stuff like that is I think it's cool, but it's also concerning that you can have this stuff learning and being more real, and it's all hosted in the cloud. It's all available so that anybody can do that, right? And I've played with Lewis and Amazon Lex and all of this. It's fairly easy for any idiot to set up, like myself, right? And to set up and get going and configure and have it start working and learning and really analyzing patterns and habits and things. And that's something that maybe Elon might be onto something else here. I think he might be spot on here with this.
I guess let's see where it takes us.
But I mean, all that's a cloud service though, right? So I mean, if you look at pushing the boundaries and where companies are taking it, I think that's kind of the next evolution. It's not going to be it's not going to all be web pages and services and databases and CDNs and all that kind of core infrastructure stuff that we traditionally think about as IT folks. It's going to be more things like the systems that learn and teach itself.
And I think with the direction it's heading, there are stats on the Azure page that say 90% of Fortune 500 companies are using Azure. They have 120,000 new Azure subscriptions every single month. So you can definitely see a really big push into starting to use Azure and these services and the products there. So I thought that was really interesting. I guess I had no idea how much was really going on out there.
Yeah, it's a shift, but keep in mind, Amazon still owns this space, right? Even though Azure, the uptake is massive, Amazon is still the market leader here. And that's just something as a cloud provider, if you're looking at this stuff, be sure and check out all the vendors. Don't just, you know, cause it's something that I think even if you go down the Azure space or the Amazon space or the Google's, whatever hosting provider you go with, you have to look at this from a best in class rather than a best in breed perspective. Is that maybe you're trying to do something that Azure doesn't do yet, and you have to jump over and use an Amazon service for whatever you try to do. The great thing about this stuff is because it's all services, you can indeed do that and plug and play. Now, The billing model is a little more complex because you're going to get a bill from Microsoft, you're going to get a bill from Amazon, but it's still very possible and fairly easy to do to plug this stuff in to use whatever services you need to do, to where it's very commoditized, right? And if you find that you don't want to use the Verizon or the Akamai CDN from Azure, maybe you can go over to Amazon and see what they have to offer and use one of theirs for a CDN or something like that, right? So it's something that I think everybody has to, maybe not in the smaller market, but definitely as you get into the enterprise side of things, you have to weigh all your options, and Amazon's a major player here. Not to shoot down your stats. Not to shoot down your stats or anything.
Yeah. No. So, Rob, what would be a compelling reason to use Amazon over AWS? AWS over Azure?
Well, I mean, it's maybe they offer a. It could be they have a service that just works better for your organization for whatever you're trying to do. Amazon Lex. In my opinion, it's a little bit better of a solution and more elegant of a solution, specifically when you get to configuring it, than Lewis is. Just as an example, right? Because it's just a better service, a better experience with configuring and managing the thing. If you're looking at that area, I say you have to go specifically with the text recognition and intent recognition and vocal voice recognition for what you're trying to do. You have to look at that and really look at which model is going to be best for you. I think that's a good example of, depending on what you're trying to do, you have to really look at all these services as a whole, rather than to sell out into one specific vendor. Now, it's easier to integrate if everything's in Azure or everything's in Amazon, but they may or may not do what you want to do and if one provides that service, you have to look at a kind of a build versus buy. Is it going to be better to build all this stuff in Amazon when Azure does it out of the box, or vice versa? Should we just go and use the Azure services when we're 90% Amazon? So that's just something you have to take a look at.
I mean, I'm guessing if you're using Office 365, which obviously, you know, is a huge growing number of organizations using Office 365 for various reasons as well, that almost implies that you're going to be, well, it does imply you're going to be using Azure AD and everything anyway. So is there a lot of organizations that don't even look around? They just go with Azure AD because it's there already? go with Azure because it's there already?
I would say that's the default. I mean, I would say definitely. If you're on Office 365 and you're a small to mid, maybe even small large business, then yeah. I mean, I would say it makes sense for you to keep your skills in house to nurture those skills for where you've invested in the past. Once you hit the enterprise market, you have to look at that. You have to look at all the bases. But I would say the majority of small to medium sized businesses are going to stay in the realm that they're accustomed to living and where most of their stuff is today. That would be my guess. It's just a hunch. If anybody out there listening wants to say, "Hey, Rob, you're wrong," I would love to hear that.
Well, I think those who are listening, yeah, you know, we've talked about some of the different price calculators and so on. And Steph, I think was it you who volunteered to write up some of the content and point some links to people, or should we just get Mark onto that since he's not here?
Yeah, as much as I would like to volunteer him for that, I did volunteer myself earlier this week to get those notes done. So I will absolutely be working on those to kind of share some of that info out.
Yeah, and I would say that along with the show notes, if anybody out there listening has any questions or comments, you can email us at our first name at techsplaining.net. Or I believe it's, if you want to email us all, just info@techsplaining.net should come to all of us as well.
I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah. So Brett and Stephanie, I know, Brett, you've got a customer meeting here in about 7 minutes, so I think it'd be a good time to end. So in conclusion, Brett, do you have anything that you would like to say in conclusion of this topic?
Yeah, I think if you want to know anything about Azure, then clearly you must email Rob at explaining.net.
Yeah, and I'm clearly not the I'm pretty good with the services I've used, but some of this other stuff is way out of my range. But definitely happy to interact with any questions you have.
Absolutely no, but I have nothing else to add. I think that was great and some fantastic advice there. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, I think this stuff is definitely I try to say it's the future, but it's the now. It's very much the now. It's very much the norm. If you aren't playing with Azure now, you need to jump out there and go to the Azure portal. If you've got an MSDN subscription, you get some free Azure time. Start playing with the services. Azure integrates with Visual Studio, whatever version. Very well. So it's really easy to connect Visual Studio up to it. The Azure portal, constantly evolving, but still very good to and easy to spin these services up. So, you know, get out there and play with it if you're not already. And if you are, best of luck in implementing the solutions and hope you're doing a lot of cool stuff out there. So that's pretty much what I have to say about it.
And so how about you, Steph?
No, I think Rob covered it pretty well. You know, what it's also told me is that I think there's a lot of stuff out there that I still need to get up to speed on as well. So as we run across any training or, you know, the blogs or learning things that we're looking up as we get to know things, I'm sure we'll be sharing those out as well. But lots of good stuff, Rob. I think you had a lot of good stuff covered, and Brett, some good perspective on ISVs as well.
So Stephanie, what you're saying, Stephanie, is you need to download Visual Studio and get into Azure and download and start creating some services and all that, right?
Oh, did you say Visual Studio? No.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I think that was an excellent episode. And like Rob said, if you have any questions, please feel free to email in. I look forward to the next episode. So thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. And Stephanie and Brett, I hope you have a great rest of the week.
You too.
Thanks, you too.